What are you doing here?
Stand the waiting.
Hello, everybody, except that one person. This is, again with this, Melrose Place. Season 4, Episode 8, Dial M for Melrose. Now, here are your hosts.
Tara Aranio and Sarah D. Bunting.
Hi!
Fuck you too, Jenny. Hi!
We have another episode of Melrose Place to discuss, but first, we're going to tell you what's happening on the Patreon this week. Again with this episode 59. It's dropping August 13th. Let's read Josie Bissett's pre-season 4 TV Guide cover story.
Oh, boy.
By one Mr. Mark Schwed, who, believe it or not, has a history with one of your co-hosts we may or may not get into.
Well, he did.
Yep. Anyway. Cough. This is the story where she talked about her, Jane's big heel turn, and the cover line is, Melrose Place's Josie Bissett. Look out, Heather. This pussycat says she's gonna grow claws. Yes and no. The one I bought from eBay is the Baltimore edition, so shout out Baltimore. Extra Baltimore content, perhaps. If you want to hear that discussion, join us at patreon.com/againwiththis. This is a episode for our Patreon supporters at all levels of support, and we appreciate each and every one of you. Thank you so much.
Yes, now, thank you. And please join us. We have a good time, and there will be some hot TV Guide v. Tomato Nation goss, so enjoy.
Yeah, and this ends my 4 picks for again with this topic. So Sarah's going to be taking over soon, and you're going to want to hear what she has picked for us to talk about too.
Indeed.
First up in this episode, Dial M for Melrose, our D plot. I've just called it something something Matt something. In fact, even calling it a D plot is overstating matters. It's like a D scene.
A stub.
Yeah, a deep la. Matt brings his mom back to his place after his dad's funeral, where they chat about how much the late Mr. Fielding hated ceremonies of all kinds, except Matt's graduation, which is why Mrs. Fielding is so happy. Mr. Fielding found out Matt is going back to med school right before he died. I went back and watched that deathbed scene again to make sure. Mm-hmm. At no point did he say he was going to do that. And he didn't. So what? But I guess that's what's happening. Or she thinks it is.
Or that scene was cut and nobody told the script coordinator for this episode.
Yeah. Sure. I mean, the sign of how little regard anyone has for Matt's character is that, like, his fucking dad died and we did not get a funeral scene with, like, any of the other cast members in it. Like, this is all we get. This post-funeral conversation. Anyway, Matt refuses to let his mother get lonely with the rest of her life to live, and that's it. Moving on to our C plot. Jake and Joe try again to make things work. The first thing Jake hears when he steps into the courtyard is Joe in her apartment flirtatiously chatting with Richard about the photos from their shoot. He is goofing around with his hand on her neck in character as Ricardo, designer of clothes, ravager of women, when Jake walks in. And the other two act totally normal. Also, the door was wide open, so it would be hard to make the case that they were doing anything sneaky. But anyway, Jake says he just wanted to say goodnight since he hadn't seen Joe in a couple of days. And first, she asks him to try on a sexy jacket that Richard designed, and Jake refuses, casually at first, and then snappishly, right before putting his friendly voice back on to say goodbye and leave. And I would have loved it if he'd been like, I'm not putting rayon on, but that's not what he says.
A jacket killed my father.
Okay. Yeah. Then the spell is broken, and Richard also leaves, kissing Joe's hand on his way out. The next morning, Joe comes to check on Jake while he's setting up at Shooters. He denies having been pissed when she last saw him or jealous now, but he does note that Joe's been spending more time with Richard lately than she has with Jake. Yeah, dude, that's how jobs work. Mm-hmm. But instead of saying that, Joe turns it around on Jake, Shelly, and Shelly's butt floss bikini. normal bikini. Jo feels like her career is going well for the first time, and Jake says he would never interfere with that, and they agree they both need to work on their stubbornness. And then Shelly shows up with a box of computer stuff while Jake is outside and Jo is a bitch about it. Clip two.
Finally convinced him to enter into the 90s. Put all his accounting and his payroll into one computer. Of course, I still have to teach him how to use it. Do you know anything about computers, Jo?
Just that they're good for playing games with. Don't strangle yourself on all those cords, Shelly.
Wow.
That's not what you're trying to convince him to enter, is it? Oh, she is such a bad... It's really like the divergence between the excellent acting on the show and the absolutely shittiest, like bafflingly shittiest acting is really amazing. But
it's true.
It's sort of fun.
Yeah.
Like, she's terrible. Actually, last week, I meant to mention this last week, but you made a GIF for the visual aids of like everybody's reactions to Kimberly's big forgiveness pronunciamento.
Uh-huh.
And Shirley had this little like, all right, face that I was like, best work she's done.
Yeah.
Probably a total accident, like a baby having gas and smiling. Yeah. Like Shelly, but Shelly is terrible, but also is like entertaining for that, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Mostly because I really don't actually understand why the character is still here and why we're doing this. So I'm trying to make my own fun.
Yeah, fair. So Shelly just smiles to herself as Jo leaves, because this is why you don't let a bitch know she got under your skin, Jo, with a line like that, strangling yourself on the cords. Now she knows.
Yeah.
It's dumb. So then Jo comes to Shooters to invite Jake to something or other at the Rose Bowl. He goes to tell Shelly he's taking off for the afternoon, and Shelly tries to get him to stay by teasing him about his computer illiteracy, since he's blowing off a lesson she was going to teach him, which is the best proof yet that this isn't going to work, because he obviously does not care and is like, bye. And that's it for this plot line. Next, our B plot. Allison and Haley make another dumb decision.
No. So, God.
Haley and Allison are now so official that she is at his house when Haley has Billy and Brooke over for dinner, and seems soon to me, given Brooke's whole thing, but okay. Mm. And after the plates have been cleared, Haley very formally says he and Allison wanted to say they've fallen in love. And Billy keeps his eyes on Allison with the rest of his face in the usual inscrutable but vaguely bitchy expression you can see in the visual aids, as Haley says he and Allison didn't want to hurt Brooke and Billy. And then Allison decides she has standing to say something too. Clip three.
Billy, I hope that you won't turn away from us because we found the happiness you found with Brooke. I couldn't bear to lose your friendship.
Of course not.
And this is why you don't get baked right before the shoot.
Yeah.
There is no way this plot is so bonkers that it's hilarious. I just love that everyone is treating it totally seriously, especially Kristen Davis. And then yeah. Andrew Hsu is doing whatever it is Mongo is doing.
Uh-huh.
There's no way this dinner occurs at all. But certainly it's not like, and now that we've sat here awkwardly eating prop food for an hour and a half, now I will make the announcement that was rendered completely captain obvious by the fact that you're even here.
Yeah.
Which you wouldn't be. Like, if I'm Billy, you need to start the bidding at four figures for me to even get in the car and go over there. Because it's going to be so creepy and horrible, like, no.
Yeah. If this were happening in a real-world situation, it would just be like Haley taking Brooke to a restaurant so that she wouldn't probably, I mean, it's Brooke, but she would be less likely to have a shit fit.
That's been tried on me, and I threw the shit fit anyway. It was on my dad. Always throw the shit fit. That's my advice.
Then just don't go back to that restaurant. Or do. Who cares?
Mm-hmm. It was a chicken joint. I was never going back there anyway.
So
enjoy the show, folks.
Brooke then says she's going to leave, congratulating the new couple, weird, and wishing them the best. And Andrew Hsu is not a good enough actor to make this as chilling as it probably was meant to be on the page. Clip four.
Haley? Allison? Be happy.
Okay, dude. Okay.
Furthermore, I've crop dusted this entire room. Goodbye.
So when they have gone, Haley says he thinks they took it well, but Allison can read between the lines on Billy's pronouncements and looks upset. And Haley knows this has been hard on her, but promises they haven't lost Brooke and Billy, which, like, oh my God, so what if you did? Let them go.
Yeah, really? Like, second prizes, two more dinners with Brooke and Billy. Like, shut, no.
Right.
Lose. Get to the losing.
They're adults. Let them feel however they want about it and just get on with your own lives for however long this ridiculous affair is going to even last. But anyway, Allison is mollified enough by Haley's insistence that it's all going to work out to go sit in his lap as he tells her she's the most wonderful woman he's ever known, and then they make out. And back at their apartment, Brooke yells at Billy while he angrily stares at himself in the bathroom mirror way too close. Like, I don't even know what he's exactly mad about and what this reaction, like, what he's doing. It's weird.
Yeah, like, only on TV do people do this.
Yeah.
Like, it's just a acting fillery thing. Mm-hmm. Fine.
Yeah.
But then it's Billy. Mm-hmm. So it's like, so just pop the zit and go back in your bedroom then.
Exactly.
Why are we here?
He's so close that I was like, did he just finish, like, cutting his nose hairs? Like, what has happened? But anyway. He comes to bed.
There's an extra magnification version for that. You don't have to. Yeah.
So when he comes to bed, I'm pretty sure it's Amanda's old bed frame. It's got those, like, curvy, like, slats in the back. You can see it in the visual aids. Tell me if you think I'm right.
Yeah, that's sort of like Fido Dido meets Bob's Discount situation. I think you're right.
Brooke tries to get Billy to agree that it was hard hearing that Haley and Alice. Sorry. Pause. Dave. Beep. Brooke tries to get him to agree that it was hard hearing Haley and Allison confirm their relationship, but Billy grunts that life goes on. What matters is the two of them. And they start weirdly kissing, and you know I can't resist a weird kiss. It's in the visual aids. And shit gets gross. Clip five.
You better put in your diaphragm.
All right.
That might be the most disgusting thing I've heard in a clip on this podcast. It's not like,
I mean,
well, I'm going to start using it at inappropriate times. Like, dinner's on the table. You better put in your diaphragm.
I think the dog ate something bad. You better put in your diaphragm. All right.
Hey, today is St. David's Day. Better put in your diaphragm.
Alternate side restrictions have been canceled for the following dates. Amen. But any time. Oh, God.
Anyway.
Also, when do the writers think it is? And yes. I say this as someone who had a diaphragm in the 90s, but that's just a very TV thing. But it's like, what other possible reason could she have to leave the bed?
Right.
And still, just put it in the bedside table. Like,
it's
your first day? Come on.
Yeah. But also in the 90s, like, I feel like she would be on the pill.
Yeah.
Anyway. By the way, speaking of contraception, I was very pleased that Schmigadoon, for all my other problems with it, IUD representation. There's an IUD bit in the third episode. And I was like, hell yeah.
Well done, Schmigadoon. This podcast brought to you by Mirena.
So back to this episode. Of course, the only reason the diaphragm is mentioned is so we can watch Brooke go to the bathroom, get the case out, then definitely not put her diaphragm in, because that's how shit works. If someone had said a credit card, it would have been because it was about to get turned down. This is TV. The next morning, Allison's telling Jane all about her and Haley's deal while they're out for a run, and they pass this fluffy white dog out for a walk and like give this dog a spinoff. It's the fluffiest dog.
Yes. Star Sammy Ed. Love him.
See, you can of course see this buddy in the visual aids. Jane also catches Allison up on the broken engagement, even though it happened before the party, and we saw them there, but never mind, we already talked about Richard. In his room, some number of days later, Haley brings Allison breakfast in bed, then announces that he wants her to move in with him, maybe just for a couple weeks at first, if she wants. Allison says this is moving fast, was like, yes, dummy, he's fucking old. That's how shit goes. But she'll think about it. And then Brooke and Billy are getting home just in time to see Allison walking out of her place with a suitcase, which is clearly an empty prop. You can see a gif I made of her, like, swinging it back and forth like a fucking lunchbox. Like, put a couple of phone books in it, you guys.
Oh, God. I didn't even notice that until I saw the gif, but you're so right.
So, not in the scene. Obviously, it's not empty. In the scene, it is full, and she has to tell Brooke she has it because she's moving in with her dad. And Billy looks amused, wrong expression, as the foreboding music starts and Allison keeps talking instead of moving it along. Clip six.
Brooke, we love each other very much. He also loves you very much. Please don't shut him out of your life because of me. Break his heart. Billy? Good night. Billy, she's moving into my house. My house.
It's your father's house, Brooke.
Oh, boy.
You'd better put in your diaphragm.
Our A plot. Jack has an accident, in air quotes. Kimberly has another breakthrough. So we pick up with Amanda exactly where we left off. She's with Jack in his mansion, getting gripped by the arm. He doesn't want to hurt her unless she forces him. And so she knees him in the balls and then runs up the stairs, not out of the house.
Yeah,
to her
I don't
car.
Want to victim blame. I guess she just panicked. And I understand why this had to happen. Like, he has to get to the top of the stairs, too, for reasons. But it really, like, my notes were like, the door is right there.
Yeah. They did not go far. Mm-mm. Anyway, classic dumb horror movie thinking slash, you know, plot exigencies required. Mm-hmm. She ends up in a very tacky bedroom with a white satin nightgown laid out on the bed. And as he wraps it around the back of her neck and yanks her, he says she wore it on their wedding night when she said she'd never leave him. And he orders her to make love to him like she did that night. And they get in a slap fight. And when she falls back onto his golf bag, why is this upstairs? The furthest away from where it's ever going to need to be? Whatever. But she grabs a club, hits him in the leg, and runs out. And when he chases after her, she ducks. And he trips and falls from the third story railing into the foyer, hitting the chandelier on the way down. And when she looks down at him on the, like, fucking marble floor, sure seems like he did not survive. Cut to Peter's house, where he picks up the phone to a call from Amanda, asking for his help and briefly outlining the situation. And after the credits, Amanda opens the front door to Peter. She did not call an ambulance. And Peter examines him in the weirdest, least convenient way, like it's obviously for the cameras, but Jack is on his stomach with his face turned left toward the camera. And Peter comes up on his right side and leans his entire body over Jack, like, surely you could have moved the camera one time.
Yeah, seriously. That I was like, oh, it's for the camera. But then it's like, but it's for the camera, which you can move. Like, this isn't a stage production.
No. But anyway, Jack's not dead. Peter and Amanda argue about what to do since she doesn't want cops involved. But Peter says Jack does have to get to a hospital or he will die, and then calls 911, which I think the cops come in that case anyway. I think if you call 911, everyone comes.
Yeah, and this is just a very soapy, like, again, soap exigencies. I understand why this was not done, because if it were done, they would not be able to drag this out over however many episodes, but right. like, just call the police, tell them what happened. This is a mafioso who used to abuse you.
Right. Yeah. The cops are not involved in your insurance fraud. Like,
yeah,
that's not a cop issue. That's a civil issue.
Yeah.
Anyway, Peter tells Amanda not to talk to anyone until they get their story straight. She tries to argue, but he just tells her to go home, and she does. And the next morning, Kimberly calls out to Peter. Getting no answer, she turns the coffee on, followed by the radio. It's this little kitschy faux jukebox that's way too corny for the look of the rest of Peter's place. It's so weird.
It's very weird. Like, why is that Spencer Gifts thing here?
Yes, he would have, like, the
cat tree condo.
Right. He would have that Bose, like that flat thing that they advertised in the New Yorker for the entire 1990s and part of the 2000s. You know what I'm talking about? Where it's like the rectangle that was just all speaker. That's what he would have.
He would also have a poke boat hanging on one wall. Remember the poke boat?
Yes.
You better put in your diaphragm.
Dr. Brothers' show is on again, even though it was airing at night when we heard it last. And Kimberly reads a note from Peter claiming he had to go in early to work. And when she looks up, Schmenry is back on the deck with his arms crossed again. And he disappears when she looks away. But when she goes outside, she sees muddy footprints and tells herself, with relief, he is real. Over to the hospital, where Amanda has disobeyed Peter's direct orders by fucking showing up. Jack is still alive, but if another doctor examines him, they're going to see injuries that don't conform to Peter's story of a household accident, so Amanda needs to stop making things harder for him. And he then demands to know whether he is doing the right thing with his intervention. She tells him all the shit we already know. New info, though we probably could have guessed, her dad helped her fake her death. The issue is, of course, the insurance payout, so even if she is cleared in the matter of Jack's near death, which he fell, she did not push him, his powerful allies will make sure she gets fucked for the insurance fraud, even though she was not the one who benefited from that payout at all. Like,
yeah. And she didn't even change her name,
right?
As far as we could tell, so
right.
That's not the issue, and I really doubt, given that he is an organized criminal, that the, quote, powerful interests, like, if they got away with this insurance fraud, they're not saying shit about it now.
Right.
To try to screw her over, they don't care.
Right.
Why are we acting like this matters?
Right.
They're laundering money through a cable system.
So then Nick, the lawyer's there, wanting to know what happened to Jack, and here's Peter's little story, clip 7.
I found him last night. I went by to talk to him about a business investment we discussed at a party. There was no answer, and the door was open, so, anyway, he was lying there unconscious. He obviously fell from the upstairs landing. There's bleeding on the brain, and only time will tell how critical it is.
I see. How awful. What a stroke of luck that you were there last night, Doctor.
Absolutely. Otherwise, he definitely would have died.
Of course. Well, you'll keep me informed. And Miss Parisi, I'm very sorry that you have to go through all of this.
Thank you, Mr. Diamond. God, Peter. What happens when Jack wakes up? They'll know you lied and he'll tell half-truths and turn it all against
you. Shh. We'll worry about that if the time comes. I wasn't lying about his injuries, Amanda. They're very serious. With any luck, he may never wake up.
You don't need luck. You're on a soap opera and you already tried to kill Amanda. Just go in there and close his nostrils with your hand.
Yeah. And yet, that's not what happens. Sometime later.
She says, espousing murder, but...
soap murder. That's different. Anyway.
It is.
Sometime later, Amanda lets herself into Jack's hospital room. Bitch, go home. But if she had... we would not get this. Clip 8.
You care, don't you, darling? But you're worried. I can see it in your face. He's gonna turn me in, you're thinking.
You sick bastard, you attacked me.
And who's gonna believe that? Look at me.
everyone.
And look in the mirror. Don't worry, I won't tell. How could I do that to my loving wife? No. You'll never leave me again. You can't, Amanda. I'd have to kill you.
Very predictable.
Mm-hmm.
Before Amanda can respond, Peter comes in behind her and yells at her for being back at the hospital again. And this is where I was like, where are the shots of her, like, getting in her car, going home for 20 minutes, and then just, like, turning around and coming back because she cannot stay away? But
Yeah.
So she tells Peter what just happened. He promises to keep her safe. But when Michael sees them walk out together, he asks a nurse for Jack's chart and chuckles to himself as he checks it out. And at the hospital the next day, Peter approaches Jack's room just as Michael comes out ordering tests. Peter tries to get territorial, but Michael says that Jack's lawyer, Nick, hired him on a suspicion that Peter is doing a bad job caring for him, and Michael's just looking out for his partner. So Peter orders Michael to stay away from Jack, which if the lawyer hired him, I don't think he can do. But anyway, Michael speculates about why Peter, he assumes, fucked Jack up. Couldn't handle the thought of Jack getting back in Amanda's pants. And Peter slams Michael against a wall, warning him to keep his mouth shut. Guys, your colleagues can see you. This is why you're not getting more OR hours, because you're always getting into fights in public. Then it's nighttime, and I guess Kimberly has found the All Joyce Brothers radio station because her show is on again, and Kimberly is calling in also again. Michael's in his car listening while this occurs. Clip 9.
I have done battle with a number of demons in my life lately. There was a time they manifested themselves in a person I kept seeing. Someone who represented all of my fears, who was a part of me but separate. But I managed to cut him out of my life.
And has the therapy you've been involved with helped you understand these internal conflicts?
Can't believe she's doing this again.
Absolutely. First of all, I've realized that the real demon in my life is my husband, Michael Mancini.
Please, Kim, first names only. But I'd like to hear more about your husband.
Dr. Brothers, this man is one notch below the Antichrist. I mean, first he nearly killed me in a drunken car accident, and then, after I forgave him, he went out and cheated on me. I gave him nothing but love, and he did nothing but abuse me.
Like, I'm not going to stand for this crap.
Are you and Michael still married?
Well, legally, yes, but we are definitely separated.
Well, that may well have been the most healthy move. But now we have some callers online to talk to you and give their thoughts. First names only, please. You're on the air.
Yeah, this is Fred. You know, this babe sounds like a certifiable nutcase. Someone ought to seal her up in a lead vault somewhere and post warning signs for future generations.
These comments aren't very helpful, Fred, was my favorite line reading of the entire episode.
It's very good.
However, I disagree.
Yes. By the way, while this is happening, the business that Kimberly is doing is taking a chicken out of the oven, and it is so pink. Like,
yeah,
you can see the visual
Thanksgiving
aids
at the construction site.
Yeah.
So the Salmonella special.
Yep. Not done. Also, mm-mm. Dr. Joyce, fire your call screener, first of all. But anyway, Kimberly obviously recognizes Michael's voice, and they start bickering about who tried to kill whom more. And then Michael's letting himself in at Amanda's place. He's pretty sure Amanda's going to want to come after Peter for inadequately caring for her husband. So Amanda's like, wrong, and busts out the Polaroids, which are here on site, not in the safe deposit box, but whatever.
Mm.
And Calabro does an excellent job, by the way, of looking actually horrified in a way that Michael, the mustache-twirling villain, rarely gets to do. He does nice work in this scene.
Yeah, agree.
Amanda asks what it will cost her for Michael to let Peter resume letting Jack die, basically. And only then does Michael figure out she is the one who nailed Jack. And again, he definitely fucking fell. The only thing she did that might be criminal is wait a while to call for an ambulance. But anyway.
Right.
When he hears the whole story, Michael says he doesn't want her money. Clip 10.
I may not be the best of men, but there was a time when I loved her with everything I had. And I never want to see you hurt.
Mm-hmm.
What will you tell Jack's lawyer?
That I was hasty in my recommendation. That the wounds are consistent with the fall.
You'll lie.
I'll lie. For you. Good night, Amanda.
Good job.
Yeah, by both of them.
Yeah.
Like, this plot is tiring, but, you know, some people are doing their best who aren't Billy.
Yeah. I never liked the two of them as a couple. I believe we are both on the record with that, but
yeah,
I do miss
sure.
the two of them getting to act together because they are titans.
Mm-hmm. Agree.
So then Kimberly in her cropped denim vest with nothing under it come to the medical office looking for Peter, who is not there. Kimberly's dubious about Sydney's story that he's been spending a lot of time with Amanda lately, given how Amanda tried to get Peter's medical license revoked. And then Sydney makes a meal of bringing Kimberly up to speed. Clip 11.
Why the concern? You didn't think that Peter was interested in you, did you? Oh. Oh, you poor, deluded psycho. Don't you know? Your saintly Peter is just using you to work out his own little problems.
What are you talking about?
Hasn't he told you about his sister? Oops. I see that he hasn't. Ask him sometime. I think that he's just working out his guilt over her death by trying to help you. By the way, how is electroshock going? Certainly has put an attractive curl in your hair.
You're a lying little bitch.
Well. Wow. She is, but she's not lying about this.
Yeah, that's true.
Still, kind of rough stuff. At Amanda's, where she has so much garlic for someone I'm pretty sure does not cook. See it in the visual aids. Peter's commenting on what she's apparently just finished telling him about Michael's visit. Until Jack's condition changes, they just have to wait. Peter promises not to desert her. She doesn't know what she would have done without him. And then the writers hope we forgot how he literally tried to murder her last season. Clip 12.
I want you to know how sorry I am.
I am so tired of reliving the past. I'm just grateful that you were there for me.
Peter? I know you're up there.
Oh, no.
Kimberly, what the hell are you doing?
How could you do this to me? You lied to me about Amanda and about your sister.
Do you realize what you've done? Huh? Look at this. You've gone out of range, damn it. They could put you back inside for this.
Doesn't matter anymore. I don't care. You were the last person on Earth I trusted.
Hold it right there, officer. Yeah, let me explain. My name is Dr. Peter Burns. This woman is under my care.
Is this Kimberly Shaw?
Yes, it is. If you'd let me explain...
Explain it to the court. She's in violation of parole. She's going downtown with us.
You lied to me.
Oh, boy.
I mean, the fact that this entire, like, her being out of jail... I get why they have to do it, but it's so unrealistic that now nothing that happens has any stakes, as we'll see, like, two scenes later.
Uh-huh.
Because it's like, I had to talk to Judgey, and then he let you out because I said that I did a doctor thing. Like,
yeah. Oh, so then Amanda comes out to see the end of this exchange looking unsurprised and resigned. And then we're at Peter's the next morning, where given what everyone is still wearing, it seems like Kimberly has spent the whole night yelling at Peter. In the process, she repeats what Sydney told her about his sister, and we get this newish information. Clip 13.
I loved my sister. She was my friend. She was my foundation. They let her rot in some hellhole because an incompetent with a medical degree decided that she was beyond hope. That's why I became a doctor. Because I swore I would never let what happened to her happen to anyone I cared about ever again. do care about you, Kimberly. Don't lose faith in that or yourself.
Please leave me alone.
Kimberly.
Look, I can't leave or I would. So would you please just leave me alone? For now.
All right, so to be fair to Peter, who is, as we all know, an attempted murderer, he has been very clear in this season about his intentions with Kimberly and that they were not romantic. Like, yes, he dicked her around for his own benefit, but she knew he had when she planted mm-hmm. the bombs. She has mm-hmm. let him back in since then. So all this "you lied to me" stuff is, while true, old business that he had no reason to think they had not settled.
Yeah.
All right. As long as we agree.
No, we do.
So later, Kimberly's at Peter's watching an action show of some kind when Schmenry shows up to menace her some more. But this time, she has a baseball bat and comes after him, which is amazing.
Oh, my God. It's so good. She's like, oh, no. Yoink. I mean,
yep.
Famously visual medium of podcasting, but please go to the visual aids because the gifts tell the story.
It was
so
it was a joy to give. So they end up in someone else's yard where the sprinklers are on. And as she straddles Schmenry and slaps his head into the ground, she sees that his facial hair is coming off and peels off his goatee. And sounding hilariously annoyed, she demands to know who he is. And he says that Michael and Sydney paid him to fuck with her. And she kisses him in relief, then fires him, and then stands up in triumph. And again, her body in the scene looks incredible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Finally, Peter finds Amanda in the on-call room at the hospital. There is no news. Ray Jack. He doesn't remember anything about how he was injured. He just keeps asking for his wife. And Peter tells her to go home and get some rest. And then, clip 14.
Code blue, Dr. Burns to room 414.
Jack.
Code blue, code blue. Oh, boy. So Amanda follows Peter as he runs into the room. They all run a code on Jack. And then Peter ends up getting his heart to start again while Amanda's like, come on, man. That's where we leave.
Which side are you on?
Well, yeah, I mean, in fairness, obviously he can't just let him die with everybody else there, but it is unfortunate timing.
It's true.
And that's it for the episode. Let's close up by naming our MVP.
Brooke's diaphragm, motherfucker.
You better put in your diaphragm.
All right.
Yeah.
But seriously, I think Kimberly / Mark Paul's Mary Chase of realization. But Marcia Cross.
Yeah, I agree. She is delightful in this episode. Triumphing over the bad writing that we keep complaining about.
Yeah, I really hope this is going to move things along for her because mm-hmm. she's been marooned in this plot area too long and enough.
Least valuable player. Brooke, for being such a crybaby about her dad, like, grow up, you're married to another person. Pay attention to him. I mean, I wouldn't want to because it's Billy, but that was not my choice. It was yours.
Jack. Fucking, like, Rasputin, that guy.
It's true.
Next time on Again With This, will Matt return to med school? Are Joe and Jake doomed? Again? Some more? Is Haley actually Bluebeard? And who's a bigger whore, Sydney or Dr. Joyce Brothers? You'll have a whore of a headache after you see our visual aids. For this and every other episode of Again With This, they're on our website, againwiththispodcast.com. That's also where you'll find a link to buy our very special 90210 book, which is available in all formats. To learn more, follow us on Twitter at AWT90210. And our Patreon may not be the best of men, but there's still tons of extra 90210 and Melrose content over there, including our recaps of the 90210 OMG podcast. That is all at patreon.com/againwiththis. Join today and hurl yourself off a balcony into our soft archives. I'm lying, not that little bitch, Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is first-time, long-time Tara Ariano, and she's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer is sexy computer lesson David T. Cole. Talk to you next time.
You better put in your diaphragm.
All right.
Cool.